Last week, the state of Utah passed a law enumerating protections for LGBT persons in employment and housing, at the same time offering broad religious exemptions. The support of a large majority in the state's GOP-dominated legislature, as well as the Mormon Church, including one prominent leader who has close ties to the extremist anti-gay World Congress of Families, has made many LGBT advocates suspicious. With religious language at the center of separate legislation regarding who can claim a conscience exemption regarding marriage equality, and the right to discriminate spelled out in a growing list of state-level religious freedom acts nationwide, well, there's plenty to keep those of us working to protect both faith and freedom very busy. At the forefront of that effort is Rabbi Jack Moline, Executive Director of Interfaith Alliance, and as always, I'm delighted to welcome him on State of Belief Radio. Jack, welcome.
Thank you, Welton.
You recently submitted testimony to a congressional committee regarding the Federal Restoration of Religious Freedom Act. Would you first talk about where you draw the line on this issue, because it is so vulnerable to misapplication of the language of religious freedom as an excuse to discriminate? So tell us about where you are.
So I think everybody who is on the left side of this issue is a little surprised at how the Religious Freedom Restoration Act has been used in ways that it was never intended, which is to exempt individuals from observance of laws that were enacted for the general good. Without it, we are going to find ourselves in a situation in which our society is atomized over the question of religion again, and I just don't want to see that happen. Mm. We have a society in which the common good is at the center of our constitutional government. If you read the preamble of the Constitution, the mission statement of the United States is there: a more perfect union, the general welfare, the common defense, us and our posterity, all of us together. And to use this Religious Freedom Restoration Act to create, as one of my colleagues calls it, RFRA madness, in order to continue the exclusionary practices that America was founded to eliminate, I think is simply wrong. And that's why we have to work against that use of it.
Is it too severe to say that people in the states who didn't agree with RFRA and who wanted it to be more accommodating to their particular point of view are now using state legislatures to put in place ideas that really were contradictory to the federal document?
We're seeing that all over the country. And while there's a certain amount of sympathy in my heart for people who feel that their so-called traditional values are being challenged by the opening of religious freedom to people of all persuasions, it's no excuse for using the law as a weapon.
Mm. What are your thoughts about the so-called Utah Compromise? That's another tricky one to parse.
Yeah, you know, I need to say right from the start that I am a fan of the adherents of the LDS Church. I find them to be people of deep-seated family values and commitments to godliness as they interpret it. And I'm happy to see that they have a self-reflective nature that has been something that has typified their march forward into the 21st century. But I also think that the influence that they seem to have over the Utah State Legislature is probably the best argument to preserve the protections of the First Amendment to separate church and state. Because it's true that without the support of the Mormon Church, this law would never have been passed. If they had opposed it, the state legislature wouldn't have considered anything that would have secured the rights of LGBT individuals. So it is a mixed blessing. I think we need to take our cue from people of different sexual orientation who live in the state of Utah. They are the ones most affected by this law, and I think we need to support their efforts to secure the rights that they feel are more accessible to them now. But at the same time, I don't think we can let up our conversations with people who would get in the way of their full participation in the whole panoply of activities of American society.
Jack, I know, as you said, you're trying to keep an eye on RFRA in state houses across the country. Specifically, what's the role of Interfaith Alliance allies on the ground, particularly in jurisdictions that may not have a local affiliate of the alliance in place? What do people need to be watching closely about for what's going on?
So first and foremost, an informed citizenry can be a responsible citizenry. People in the localities and in the states need to be looking very carefully at the language of these state religious freedom proposals to make sure that they are not reinstituting the very prejudices and biases that the original RFRA was meant to take away. If there's a law that exempts, for example, people who run commercial enterprises, which are voluntary activities on the part of any citizen, from upholding the rights and privileges that are part of American citizenhood, that's not a good law. Our religious convictions in this country are protected, but they're not definitive. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a right to say that the restaurants in my neighborhood can't serve pork because I keep kosher. That's simply not something that I can do.
Well, I know that this is a major focus of Interfaith Alliance, but I also know that you're busy about a lot of other concerns as well. What else is on the plate?
I think that my heart is closest right now to the frustration that a lot of American Muslims feel about their role in our society. There is so much language in our national discussion now about how we're going to combat people who've taken Islam to an extreme and used it as an excuse to do some very unreligious stuff, ungodly stuff. I'm worried about the Muslim population that even if there is no indication that our government is going to act against the Muslim community, I know what it means to be part of a minority that is the subject of unpleasant language that seems to envelop the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of our major concerns as well. And, well, now I'll tell you, we, like everyone else, are looking at 2016 and wondering what the issues are going to be. We're discussing what our focus should be for those elections, what questions we want to encourage people to ask of the candidates, and how we can emphasize our collective responsibility rather than our individual rights as being central to the American endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Jack, on this show, every week before we get off the air, I encourage people to join Interfaith Alliance. I really would like for you to take just a couple of minutes to encourage listeners to become more directly involved in Interfaith Alliance.
Part of the value of a non-government organization is the sense of consensus that it's able to bring to the table. That's one thing for Interfaith Alliance to stand up for the values that we support, and we do that religiously. But what's far more important is that when we represent those values, we can say we're not just speaking for a group of people sitting in an office in Washington, and we're not just speaking for the affiliates we have in states across the nation. We're speaking for a grassroots consensus among our members. And the larger the number of the blades of grass, the greater the consensus we have, the more effective we are in communicating what we're all about. Interfaith Alliance remains the only organization that approaches these issues with a positive attitude toward protecting faith in this country. I don't mean to criticize our partners in coalition, but there is almost a grudging acceptance that they have to protect the rights of religious communities, and religious communities with whom they may disagree on the eventual outcome of issues on which they advocate. I want to make sure that Mormons and conservative Christians and Orthodox Jews and Orthodox Muslims have the same rights and privileges and the same voice in American society as people who are part of those religious communities or who are themselves non-believers, who are atheists or agnostics, want to have in the community and can bring the values that flow from their philosophy or from their religious perspective to that conversation. Only the people listening to this program can amplify that voice to a point where it will be heard above the din of everybody else clamoring for one perspective or the other. And that's why not just a membership, but a contribution beyond membership to Interfaith Alliance to give us a monthly gift that would make you a torchbearer to participate in the activities that we have both nationally and around the country. those are the things that will make us more effective in the values that those of you who are listening to this already share with us. So anything you can do to help us and everything you can do to help us will be greatly appreciated.
Jack, thanks for that. I have one more question before we go today, and I'm asking you to reflect on something out of your own faith tradition, even more than as the head of the Interfaith Alliance. We've all been concerned looking at what has gone on in Israel this past week with the elections. We certainly are all aware of the amount of excitement and controversy that came related to that in our own nation. I don't know what you feel comfortable talking about, but I wish you'd just share some of your thoughts about what's gone on in Israel over the last several weeks.
Well, thank you for asking me that question. And I want to make sure that I just echo what you said, that the comments I'm about to make are not reflective of the policies of Interfaith Alliance. We stay out of international affairs entirely. So Interfaith Alliance has no position right on anything in the Middle East. Look, I'm of two minds. On the one hand, I have to say that Israel is one of the very few democracies that has existed uninterrupted since its founding. In that sense, it has something very much in common with the United States. The transition of power has been peaceful. The people have spoken. They have elected the various pieces of their parliament, of their Knesset, and now they have to be put together by someone who will lead that government. That standard is a little different than we have here. But I would be remiss if I didn't note with alarm some of the things that were said by people campaigning for office in Israel that strike me as being counter to the values that drew me to apply for the position at Interfaith Alliance. In particular, the suggestion that the presumed victor in this election, Benjamin Netanyahu, has eschewed the notion that there will ever be a Palestinian state as long as he's prime minister. That represents a shift in policy for him. It represents a shift in policy for Israel, and it puts Israel at odds with what the expressed position of the American government has been through a number of administrations now. I'm also very concerned, as I have been in elections all over the world, including in this country, when essentially the race card is played. His call to his supporters to come out in greater numbers to the polls because Arabs were voting in the election in larger numbers than he expected or that the pollsters expected seems to me to not be the kinds of values that that at least the Israel that I grew up believing in would want to promote. There is room in a democratic society for everyone, and I would be concerned if that now reflects a new kind of exclusion in Israeli society. But having said that, I have to come back to the initial statement I made. It was a democratic process. It is above reproach. There is nobody who's suggesting that the election was rigged or stolen or in any way compromised. And the behavior of the candidates aside, I can't help but feel great pride that with everything going on in the Middle East, for more than 70 years, Israel has been able to maintain its democratic nature without interruption and without interference.
Rabbi Jack Moline is Executive Director of Interfaith Alliance. A dear friend, a longtime colleague, State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance, and you'll find more information on the vital work of protecting faith and freedom at interfaithalliance.org. Jack, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Will.